is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 13, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And this is the free version of the episode. The extended episode is 16 minutes longer than this version. And to get access to the extra 16 minutes, you can join the Alien UFO Podcast Patreon campaign. When you sign up for $7.50 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $4.50 a month, you get an extended episode every month. There are now 13 extended episodes available, but the back catalogue will grow every week. And the Patreon episodes are ad-free and released 2 days before the free versions. And you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the links are in the show notes. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Past Lives Podcast. There are over 200 episodes. On the Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence of the afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And this week I'm talking to Lon Strickler about his book, Alien Disclosure, Experiences Expose Reality. Lon is a Fortean researcher, author, and publisher of the syndicated Phantoms and Monsters blog. He began the blog in 2005, which has steadily grown in popularity and is read daily by tens of thousands of paranormal enthusiasts, investigators, and those seeking the truth. His research and reports have been featured on hundreds of online media sources. Several of these published reports have been presented on various television segments, including the History's channels Ancient Aliens, Sci-Fi's Paranormal Witness, Fact or Faked, Paranormal Files, and Destination America's Monsters and Mysteries in America. He has been interviewed on hundreds of radio and online broadcasts, including multiple guest appearances on Coast to Coast AM. He was also featured on Destination America's Monsters and Mysteries in America television show for the Sykesville Monster episode. Lon has written 9 books and is currently the host of Phantoms and Monsters Radio on YouTube. Hi Lon, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
No problem, thanks for having me.
So I wanted to talk to you about your book. It's called Alien Disclosure, Experiences Expose Reality. Have you always had an interest in alien abduction, or did you start with interest in other paranormal stuff?
You know, alien abduction was probably the first aspect of the paranormal, other than me being an intuitive, that I was interested in, because I was interested with the initial incident with the Betty and Barney Hill in New Hampshire. And that started getting into the press back in the late 60s. But I was around 8 or 9 when that occurred. And I started showing interest in that. But I've been interested in it for a long time. Now, as far as researching and talking to witnesses and such, that began a little bit later, but I've been doing my research and investigating for over 40 years now.
And you've got an impressive, extensive website. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I started the blog site in 2005, Phantoms and Monsters. And the reason I did that, basically I got talked into doing it, but I was writing for another blog, and I had a couple people telling me that, you know, you should really write your own blog and put in what you want. And that's what I started doing. And as time went on, it became more popular, and it's a daily blog, as best I can do it, if I'm not busy with something else. But I kind of cover everything, all types of paranormal activity, cryptids, and everything that comes my way.
And you say in the book you're quite a capable remote viewer. Has any of your remote viewing ever viewed anything extraterrestrial?
Yeah, it has, actually. I've been involved with a couple of cases of either abduction or encounters where I had used some remote viewing. When I was training with remote viewing, I actually was trained by an individual who worked for MI6 and had retired. And that person taught me how to remote view. They were a capable remote viewer and psychic. And I basically trained through them on Skype for about a 6-month period until I started to, get the hang of doing it. And but it's, since then, it's been incorporated in almost all my my cases: UFO, alien, cryptid, and home invasion, home infestation, and such.
What sort of extraterrestrial stuff have you seen?
Well, there was one in particular. This was part of a training RV that I did, where the location was unknown to me, of course, set by the monitor. And I ended up going to, I believe, was a planet other than Earth. I actually traveled into viewed into a large cavern where, as I continued on, I ran into a very large and unusual, what I believe was an extraterrestrial that looked almost like a T-Rex. And I don't know where it was. Because of the situation, this extraterrestrial started to notice that I was there, took notice of me, and it frightened the monitor, and that person pulled me out of it. So I really don't know where I ended up at, but I'm sure it was someplace other than Earth.
It's interesting that that creature, whatever it was, could spot you and see that you were doing it, because I suppose if somebody was remote viewing me, I'd have no clue.
Well, I don't know if it has special abilities as to be able to detect me there, or my sense of being is there, or my unconscious mind was there observing it, but it seemed pretty obvious by the way it was acting that it knew something was there.
I've got so many questions about remote viewing. We're supposed to be talking about your book. Finally, could I just ask, with remote viewing, are you able to view across time, sort of into the future or the past?
Most of my remote viewing is done at present. I have been able to look into the past for cases. As far as going forward or into the future, I haven't reached that ability, and I'm not really sure how reliable that actually is, but I haven't been able to do that.
Something you talk about in the book at the beginning is you feel like humanity has been interacting with non-terrestrial beings for a long time. So how far back do you think it goes?
Well, I was actually involved in an abduction back in 2000 to 2015. And during this incident, I was taken to a location, which I really don't know what it was, but it was these three tall gray beings who I had had encounters with before. And they were showing me what I believe was their interpretation of history. And what it showed me was that these beings, or that other non-terrestrial beings, were involved in a lot of human history as far as major civilizations and example, the Mesopotamians, the Fertile Crescent, the Greeks, but in particular the Egyptians. And they did show me an incident where a large dish-like craft, and I mean large, I'm talking maybe miles and miles across, landed in the area of what is now the Nile Delta. And this occurred, from my estimation, was like 12,500 years ago, where many of the civilizations or the people that were that lived there at the time were intermingling with these non-terrestrial beings, and this is a lot of what resulted into a lot of the major civilizations that are in our history, or we know that are in our history. So yeah, I think it goes back a long time. Now, is this the major incident of intermingling? It may very well be, but I'm not quite sure of that. But they did make emphasis of this period of time.
And was there kind of interaction with humans where they would be doing genetic engineering on us or crossbreeding?
It seemed to me that they were literally breeding with us. Now, from what I could tell, that these beings were almost like they were human. As time has gone on and as I've looked into this and looked into other cases, I do believe that the human species is probably a universal species. In other words, that we're not the only humans in the universe. I think we have evolved from human-like beings into what we are now and into what's going on in the future. That the aliens or non-terrestrials that people see and report now are probably evolved humans that are able to come back into time by whatever means they've developed, technology they developed. And I think that most non-terrestrials that we interact with are evolved humans.
When they were, say, crossbreeding with humans in the first place, thousands of years ago, was it for a specific purpose? It was a part of a plan, or was it just that it just happened?
No, I think they always have had an agenda for whatever reason. But it seemed, and I really don't know what the specific agenda is. But I think that back then, at that period of time, it was more or less of an interbreeding type of program so they could get access to what's going on this planet. I think a lot of times when these beings, these non-terrestrial, would show up to some of the ancient civilizations, they would show themselves as something that was familiar to the people, to the humans that were already there, that they made themselves look more human. I think in particular, like with Mesopotamians and the Egyptians, their gods have been depicted as being chimera-like beings, humans with animal heads and with other attributes of animals, but definitely humanoid. I think they showed themselves like that to gain the trust of the humans.
And it seems like there's something going on today, because we hear about the hybrids. You have that in your books, certain reports of crossbreeding with humans, even today, thousands of years later. Do you think it's still the same plan? They haven't finished what they're doing?
Possibly, but I think from what I have learned from some of the experiencers is that this hybrid program or hybridization or, breeding with humans is, and also experimentation, is their way of trying to discover something, an attribute that us humans have that they don't particularly have or understand. And that's the human soul, our ability to move on to other levels after we pass and our life force stays there and goes into another realm. And I think that's something they may have had at one point, but they lost and are trying to rediscover it. It seems like they're somewhat jealous of that attribute that humans have or believe in. And I think that it's an attempt for them to gain that. Now, have they done that? I don't know.
We hear from different researchers who look into alien abductions where they talk about hybrids. If it's David Jacobs, he seems to come to quite a menacing conclusion. But then Mary Rodwell has a conclusion that perhaps it's all about ascension and raising the human race.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just going from what information I have gathered over the years and made my determination. But I believe they're, I mean, they do have an agenda. I'm quite sure that is it good, is it bad? That we really don't know. Is it something that could lead to something that could be detrimental to us? Possibly. But at this point, I really can't make that judgment or make that determination. But I do believe that they do want to have certain attributes that we possess, and possibly other physical things to strengthen their race or something they've lost in the past.
And so you were talking about the human soul. Is that, you know, that's what we might talk about as the spirit that goes to heaven or hell or reincarnates. Is that what you mean? You think they may have lost their soul?
I think they have. I believe that when a human dies, or the physical body dies, the life force, or what people call a soul, remains. Now, sometimes it can remain on this earth plane and cause some problems as it's trying to communicate with the living. I mean, in hauntings and earthbound spirits and such. But I think for the most part, they do ascend into another level. And beyond that, we're not really sure what happens. But I think reincarnation is possible to a degree. And I think that's something that they either had or don't understand and want to be a part of.
So the abduction phenomena has changed over the years.
Yes.
And it seems like it goes through generations as well. Almost like if it's happened to your parents, then it'll happen to you. And it's not just a one-off thing in people's lives. It happens over and over.
You know, it does seem that it is a generational phenomena for the most part. I believe either our ancestors have been experienced this going back many generations or even near generations. But I think the DNA involved is something that they desire, and they continue to take descendants of these people and to continue the experiment or the program or agenda that they're attempting to do with these future descendants. I've run into that a lot. And in fact, most experiencers that I have dealt with have had parents, grandparents, and further back who have had experiences, who had talked to them, though it was probably less forthcoming as opposed to what it is now. But there has been some history of some type of activity.
It's thought that Betty and Barney Hill might be the beginning of the modern abduction scenario and was happening. But if it does go back generations, then it would have been happening to a lot of people before them.
Oh, I'm quite sure it has. In fact, I'm pretty sure it has. I'm a history buff, and I collect a lot of ephemera physical evidence pertaining to the American Civil War. And in the process, I've come across a lot of letters that were sent by soldiers back to family. And occasionally you will get something in a letter that will indicate that there may have been some type of abduction at some point, where they talk about experiences outside of the body and sensing that they were taken someplace other than where they were. And you know, I don't know if it has something to do with the stress of the battle and the death around them, but it does seem that there have been things going on back then that may continue into the descendants.
In the book, you say in the 1940s through to the 1990s, the abduction scenario usually followed a similar process. So could you give us an overview of what that process was?
Well, you know, from the information I've gathered, I mean, the Benny Barney Hill's abduction is a perfect example. It was usually where someone would be taken from a location by a UFO or the occupants of a UFO, a craft of some type. And when they got on board, there were certain experiments performed. They were shown certain things. And many times the incident was literally forgotten until years later when, and this happens a lot, where the realization would hit them again of what actually happened. You know, that seemed to be the standard abduction scenario in those years, but that has evolved as time's gone by. You know, these initially abductions seem to be done by a certain race of beings, something very similar to the Greys in all shapes and sizes, but very similar to what we consider a gray being.
How have things changed now? Is it no longer that people are being, say, taken, laid out on a table, and the ETs do experiments?
Well, that continues, but it seems now that as time has gone by, it's become more of a hybridization or something to do with human reproduction and the aliens intermingling with them. Many times males and females are taken and sperm and eggs are retrieved. And as time goes on, these people are shown through another abduction of a child, which they recognize as theirs, but just not quite human. That started to evolve into maybe going into more into the turn of the century. Then as time has gone on, it seems more and more that the abduction scenario is less about a craft and more about a physical abduction from a location, either a bedroom or someplace in the home. Which is what happened to David Eckhart and his family, who I've been investigating for over a decade now, where it's kind of like portal travel or some type of transporter opens up where they're taken through. And many of these abductions through other experiencers, not necessarily David and his family, but seems to be like an ethereal bilocation abduction that involves a lot of different species of aliens, almost like a faction of maybe 3, 4, 5 of different beings, including humans. There seem to be more and more humans involved with these. Now, if these are hybrid humans, I don't know. Are they actual just Earth humans helping them? I'm not sure of that either, but it does seem to be a new factor that has evolved into the alien abduction scenario.
I wonder if these humans are born on Earth or perhaps they're born on another planet.
I don't know. I mean, and you know, it's possible that this could be an interstellar phenomenon, because I do believe that, you know, like I said before, I think the human species is very prominent within these factions of alien beings. And, I think that it's very possible that we are just not the only humans out there.
There could be people listening to this in the conversation and thinking, this is just so crazy and bizarre. But it's when you have your own experiences and you understand the reality of all this So could you tell us about one of your experiences?
Well, when I started having experience, which is interesting, I started having encounters with these three tall gray beings starting in 2015. And oddly enough, it was preceded by me seeing a lot of representation of owls. I would see owls here and there. I would hear things about owls. There was always some type of reference to an owl. This happened around the time when my wife had contracted cancer, and I started getting these messages. That period of 11 months before she was contracted and then when she passed away, it was I was continuously having these encounters. And it culminated in not long after she passed, I had an encounter with these three beings again and was taken to another location. I don't know if it was in a craft or someplace, but it was definitely not where I was. I was physically taken. And I was shown this historical representation by them. And then when I returned, it was several hours later. And I was very positive that that I was taken. And I actually started contacting several of the people that were involved in my group and started explaining it to them. And, from what they told me and what they thought, and I'm pretty sure I was abducted.
Do you feel that perhaps they became interested in you because you were doing so much research?
You know, I've had people ask me that, and I don't know. I was never given any reason as to why it was done. All I can do is just give my impressions, and but I'm not really sure. I really have no idea as to why it happened.
How many experiences have you talked to? It seems like there's a lot of them.
Well, experiencers? Oh, I've hundreds over the years. Even more than I've put into the book, minor experiencer incidents. But the book contains cases that I have been involved with that documented. But there have been a few that left an impression on me, and it was life-changing, honestly. Then when I actually had my encounters and then my abduction, I kind of understood. I had always been on the fence as to what it really meant to be an experiencer or an abductee, but actually going through it, you kind of get a better sense of what is involved, and you understand what these people are going through.
Why do the experiences contact you? Are they looking for some kind of confirmation?
Well, initially, it's usually for answers to the many questions. Why is this happening? They either get frustrated that some other groups would not help them, and they will come to me. I don't seek these encounters or these incidents. I'm usually directly contacted, and then I follow up with them.
It's such fascinating stuff, and it seems like there is so much information around, and it's been going on for decades, but still it's a subject that is ridiculed, and nobody really takes it seriously.
Well, I have found over time it is becoming more serious, and people are starting to believe these experiences more and more as time has gone by. Many times when somebody will contact me, the first thing they'll say is, I don't know if you're going to believe this. I don't even know if I believe it happened, but this is what happened. And I think many of these people are just as confused and as to what this phenomena is. And Yeah, it's simply people trying to find answers to their questions.
Why do you think there's so many descriptions of ETs? Because sometimes they seem like they're all humanoid, but they're all quite different in little ways. Like some of them described as having ears and some of them described not having ears. And also there's this idea that they can do shape-shifting or some kind of telepathically affect you so you'll see them in a different way.
Oh, I think that's very common. I think that does happen. I was working with David Eckhart, and he's been able to capture images of some of these beings over the years. And he and I both believe that they do have the ability to either show themselves to the individual in another form, or that they can shapeshift into another form. So I don't believe that this is uncommon. I think that this may be something that they use to kind of relax the experiencer, though they're still not human, and it's very strange to the experiencer to see this. But yeah, most of the forms are some type of humanoid type being, and why that is, well, I mean, you know, like I said earlier, I think it's a possibility that many of these beings, these humanoid like beings, are evolved humans from the past, and that they're coming back for whatever reason to right mistakes that they had in past times, or they're coming back to find something that they no longer possess and want to be able to rediscover.
Do you feel that they're more kind of transdimensional than, you know, just coming from other planets? Because there's this idea, or it used to be the old idea, I suppose, it was just like Star Trek, they're just scientists in metal spaceships, but it seems to be a lot weirder than that.
Yeah, you know, the whole alien UFO phenomena has kind of, in my mind, changed to the point where I think a lot of what people see, the lights in the skies or the craft that they see, are very few and far between, or maybe not even associated with some type of extraterrestrial race. I don't really believe that interstellar travel is really the norm. I think they can move, but they move between either universes or dimensions using wormholes or some type of technology similar to that. I believe as individuals, they can move between dimensions. I think a lot of these beings are what we would describe as ultra-terrestrial, that they reside on possibly dimensions very close to our Earth plane and have come in and out, for whatever reason. I also believe that for the most part, these cryptids that people report and see, normally fleeting sightings or encounters, are also ultra-terrestrials that have come from other dimensions. When you talk about cryptids, and it's just in particular to say about Bigfoot, I think there may be indigenous types of Bigfoot, but I think for the most part, and in certain areas where there are indigenous beings, but I think for the most part that these are ultra-terrestrial beings that move in and out of dimensions, and that they have the ability to do that, the ability to cloak and to perform all kinds of other abilities that we just don't really know right now.
So you talked about David Eckhart a couple of times, and mm-hmm. you've got a whole chapter about him. So mm-hmm. could you give us a basic idea of what's happening there?
Well, David and his family had been experiencing these abductions for, I'd say it began about 15 years ago, maybe a little longer, where he had built a house. He's a contractor. He had built a house for he and his family he and his wife and two children. And he and his wife started noticing activity in their bedroom, but they couldn't quite pinpoint what was going on. Now, David had possibly alien experiences previous to that, and I've written about it in the book. Now, why that is, I don't know if he's some type of beacon to these beings, or they're interested in him for a specific reason, but it does seem that they are. But anyway, he started believing that he had some spirit activity going on, but as time progressed and he started rigging up some type of camera system to where he could capture whatever it was, at one point he caught a couple of frames of some type of small humanoid standing in his in the doorway of his bedroom, of his bathroom, in his bedroom. And at that point, he started to realize that this was something other than spirit energies. And it started to progress to the point where they started seeing things moving around in the bedroom. And then at one point, David had been suffering from rheumatoid arthritis. It was a very serious case, something he was being treated for. They literally, over succession of several nights, started to work on him, performing some type of surgery. And as time went on, he was completely healed of the rheumatoid arthritis. He's very healthy today. And after that happened, he and his family were being abducted at a regular period of time. It even got to the point where they were being taken 2 to 3 times a week, but it seemed like they were picked to do this. Now, as far as they all know, nothing was ever done to them experimental wise. They were kind of taken like they were on a tour. Were shown all kinds of different aspects of this, for the most part, a reptilian type world that David believed was in an earth underground, in a large cavernous underground. And in this underground, there were reptilian communities with young reptilians, females, and families that inhabited in some type of pods or some type of structures in this cavern. But there were also other alien beings there, including humans, who were being used as you want to call it, slave labor, I guess you can call it that. And, you know, over the, you know, he had a specific reptilian being that was always present when he was taken and when he was moving about in this underground, who told David point blank that he did not like David. He was only doing this because this was what he was told to do. He would very rarely answer any David's questions, but there were certain things that David did get from it that kind of, I don't know if you want to say humanize them. I don't know if you want to call it that or not. But he was also shown some pretty horrific things as well. So, but it's all described in the book. There were things that I was also told by David, you know, over time that I just simply have not released. And I don't really know if I'm ever going to release it, but it's, you know, I tried not to sugarcoat anything that was placed in the book. I felt that, you know, I needed to put forth what was told to me, what David said he experienced, and, you know, let the reader judge for themselves.
And so did you ever hear him say stuff and think to yourself, oh, no, this is just too much. This is just unbelievable.
Well, in the beginning, I was pretty wary of him. I mean, I'll be honest, the first couple months or so, I didn't quite know how to take it, but as he started presenting evidence to me, videotapes, photographs, of, you know, this activity over time, the beings themselves and some of the descriptions of what had happened during these encounters and during these abductions, I was pretty well convinced that he wasn't faking this. Dave is a very forthright individual. To some people, he may sound a bit off or crazy, but, you know, this guy has been experiencing so many different things and so many unbelievable things that I can kind of understand what that people will come off like that. But he continues to do this yet. As time has gone forth, it's less about the reptilians and more about other factions who have become involved with their, I don't know what you want to call it, their experiment with David. But David lives alone. His daughter-in-law actually lives with him. His kids have moved on. His wife and he split up. A lot of it had to do with what has been going on, had been going on. There were times when David would be, him and his wife would be having sexual relations. And during that time, these female beings from these other extraterrestrial females would try to come in and procreate with David while his wife was there. That happened on several occasions, and I think it got to the point with the abductions and that type of activity going on that she just got fed up with it. And in a way, I can't blame her. And I think David realizes that it was something that really weakened the relationship. But but there's a lot of things involved with that, and I described it in the book as best as I could.
And you've got stills from the videos and pictures in the book, and they are interesting to look at. And is there a place on the internet where people can see the videos themselves? Is it on YouTube?
No, I just have the one video on the Phantoms and Monsters radio site of the first couple of frames that were looped together. The other videos I haven't released. David has a lot of that himself. He has been releasing it occasionally himself. He has a TikTok account where he does occasionally put it out there. He's been working with a documentary group. I don't know to what extent is going to be released at that point. But no, I haven't posted any of the videos. I've just posted some of the photographs that has been collected over time. But I don't want to impede on David's privacy. I more like to have him release these things as time comes on, as time goes on. I think it's up to him to determine what he wants to put out there.
Now, you say in the book that there was TV crew there that were at the house and they were sitting in a van outside, and then something happened and the electronics went haywire.
Yeah, this was the Factor Fake Paranormal Files show. I forget what year it was, 2013, 2014, whatever year it was. But anyway, I had contacted them about David's experiences, and they decided to do an episode on it. And like every one of their investigations, or what you call TV investigations, they tried to debunk what was going on for the most part. And as the show went on, it was becoming more apparent, even though they had a hard time believing what was happening, they were having a hard time debunking what David was telling them. Now, mind, when the show was produced, he and his family had moved out of the house. They were living somewhere else nearby. So someone else was living in the house at that time, but they allowed them to do the filming there. So there was one incident that kind of convinced it for the individuals involved with the show. David had told me at one point that when these beings would show up to his place, there was a very strong electrical charge coming through the property. And the evidence as to that happening was that each time he would come out in the morning after an encounter, his lawn and driveway and sidewalks would be covered in earthworms or night crawlers. They would, the electrical charge would literally force them out of the ground. And he was saying that almost every morning before he had to leave for work, he would have to grab the hose and start washing these damn things down on the street. And I don't think his neighbors were too happy about it. But I know they were questioning as to what was going on. But anyway, they were during the taping of the show, they had a van out front of the house with all the production people in there working and, you know, videotaping and monitoring what was going on inside the house. And it was interesting. David was in the bedroom. There was one individual in the bedroom with him. And David mentioned that he heard piano music and that they were here. He said they were here. And at that point, all the monitors and electrical equipment started going haywire. Now, there was also a camera person in the tree outside of David's window as well. So we had several people outside, but a few more people inside. And Ben Hansen, who was the lead on this team, and who I talked to and who I interviewed later on, said that, you know, all the monitors went off. It was going crazy for about 15 seconds, and then it stopped. And he went out of the van to see what was going on. And when he came out there, he said there it was dark, but he said he could see that there were earthworms or night crawlers everywhere. So that kind of sealed the deal. It was pretty hard to debunk it after that. So that was kind of the proof that, yeah, there was something definitely going on there.
And is it still going on today?
Well, that thing, those things don't happen from what Dave was telling me. They seem to come in and out now of his home in these type of transport type of mechanisms, as opposed to a portal opening up in a bedroom wall as they used to. The electrical charges don't occur, but there are a lot of other strange activities. Like there's a lot of orb activity now, and a lot of blue light flashes, even gold light flashes for when they come in and out. So, you know, David says, you know, it sometimes it just gets so tiring for him because he'll come home from work and he'll know somebody's in there. Or he'll come into the bedroom and they're moving stuff around. They've moved things around or taken things. That's one thing they used to do pretty constantly, was take electrical equipment and just take it wherever they go. Then later they would return it. But they'd be moving stuff within the house all the time.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about what David Eckhart said is, he said something about the entities believing in a higher being or a higher power. Is that like a religion?
Yeah, I think they do have some sort of religious or faith. And this reptilian told David that, you know, in a way that they're similar to us in humans, that most humans have some type of deity worship or they believe in a higher power. And that the reptilians and other beings, other extraterrestrial or aliens, and from what I understand, they all seem to worship a single higher being, and that they're very devoted to it. Now, is this higher being some type of ethereal being, or is it an actual flesh and blood being? I've never been able to get that or understand that. But they do seem to have some type of faith-based civilization.
Well, it's just fascinating stuff. If we could move on now, because there's some interesting stuff about Maria Rivera. Is that her name? Mm-hmm. And it's like with David Eckhart, there were multiple witnesses because the family was seeing it. And the same thing with Maria.
Yeah, Maria's, this happened in Puerto Rico. Her homestead was very near a rainforest. And they started noticing a lot of lights in the rainforest. And eventually a lot of things were going on around the house. The animals or pets were reacting to it. Sometimes the pets would just simply pass out in the yard or whatever, but she started to realize and started to see these small gray beings. And in fact, she had been diagnosed with cancer, and was actually being treated in New York. She would fly back to New York for treatment. And it was pretty advanced, what she told me. And at one period, they entered the home one evening and performed some type of procedure on her. And when she went back a couple months later for treatment, the cancer was gone. So, you know, they occasionally did come back. You know, it was, it didn't really seem like they interfered with them too much. She wasn't really pleased by it, but I think she tolerated them. She was very happy, because she does attribute them to curing her. So, and you know, Puerto Rico is an interesting place because I have received a great deal of encounter experience reports from Puerto Rico, all parts of the island. Why that is, I don't know. You know, of course, people recognize Puerto Rico for like the Chupacabra phenomena. Some people believe those are alien beings as well. But other than that, there does seem to be a lot of UFO and alien encounters and sightings in Puerto Rico.
And Maria got a video of a craft on her cell phone.
Yeah. She got a video of a disc-shaped craft landing in the rainforest. It was hard to make out, but it was definitely something going on there. And, you know, she's very forthright, very religious woman. And I don't think she would have lied about that or manipulated anything.
We've been talking about your book, Alien Disclosure, Experiences Expose Reality. Can you tell us about other things you've written?
Oh, foremost, I'm a cryptid investigator, cryptid researcher. I've written 9 books altogether, but there's 4 that are actually still published. I wrote a book, Mothman Dynasty, Chicago's Winged Humanoids, which describes the early part of our investigation with the Chicago Mothman phenomena. My team and I have been involved with that from the very beginning and have done most of the work with that phenomena. Between that book, after that book was written, I wrote the Alien Disclosure. That book's been out for about 3 years now. Then after that, I wrote the year before last, I wrote a book titled Winged Cryptids. And it basically continues on with the Chicago phenomena. And then I go into other winged cryptids and beings that have been reported to me over the years. And I recently published a book titled The Meme Humanoids, Modern Myths Are Real Monsters. And this has to do with the pale humanoid phenomena that a lot of people are experiencing now, worldwide, actually. but it's a strange, unexplained phenomena of people seeing these either crawling or walking pale humanoids. Many times it seems like they're some type of thought form or topa from a meme, either a graphic or a subject meme. In example, like the Slender Man, where these things are literally manifesting for whatever reason. And but I also have cases that I've been involved with in the book and such, where people see these, encounter these things, and they just seem to pop up out of nowhere. I ask the question, I mean, are these some type of manifestation, some type of thought form, or are we in the nexus of a new humanoid form that resides or is able to come onto our earth plane? I kind of leave a lot of the questions to the readers for their own determination, but it's a subject that really hasn't been written about in book form. So that's why I put it out there.
Can you tell us the address of the blog?
Yeah, it's phantomsandmonsters.com.
Fantastic. And there's so much information there. It's really worth visiting and reading through. And it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
I appreciate you having me.
And that was an interview with Lon Strickler about his book, Alien Disclosure, Experiences Expose Reality. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. And this is the free 1 hour version of the episode. The extended episode is 1 hour and 16 minutes. If you join the $4.50 a month tier, you will have an extended episode every month. And if you join the $7.50 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week and the back catalogue of extended episodes. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, where you can find my other podcast. It is called the Past Lives Podcast, and there are over 200 episodes, and it is where I look into evidence of the afterlife. And in my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regressions. And when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me and you have signed up to Patreon, you will get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. My Instagram is pastlivespodcast with an underscore between each word. And on Twitter, I am at Simon G. Bown. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group. If you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.